Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002, and it's been broadcast on community radio stations in Preston, Swindon and St Albans. We're on Bristol Community FM every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com. This week, Sam Downey and Viren Patel talk about the sinister happiness agenda based in Bristol, a place called Happy Cities. Also, Sarah Swift and Bridget Mary Oates up at Menwith Hill in North Yorkshire. That's an NSA spy base, which is under the cover of an RAF base. Edward Snowden's leaked a lot about it, but that's the main place in Britain where it happens. And they're part of a group called the Campaign for Accountability of American Bases. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk. And if you want to join in, contact the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street. They're on 0117 909 6897 or on the web at prsc.org.uk. We're also at Bristol Volunteers. I'll repeat those contact details at the end of the show. Well, I'm joined by Sam Downey and Viren Patel to talk a little bit about the happiness agenda. This is something we've talked about before, Sam, haven't we?
We have.
Now, this whole happiness agenda disturbs me, actually. The more I see, the more I feel, well, actually, this is not going to make me happy, and I'm not sure it's going to make anybody happy. But what is this whole, the latest wheeze? And what is its relation to Bristol?
Okay, so those two points, Tony. It's the latest wheeze is basically it's working, looking at key points in well-being and happiness factors, which is be, do, and connect, allow you to learn about opportunities available at different organisations. So it's occupational well-being, basically. And it's a new thing which has been developed locally in collaboration with other organisations, but mostly it's been led by an organisation called Happy City, which we've been talked about quite a bit.
Whereabouts are Happy City?
They were based in Stokes Croft in Bristol, but they've now moved to offices above Age UK on Victoria Street in Bristol, still in Bristol.
I mean, the problem I have with them, and I mean, we really ought to get them in here to give the. Let's do that at some point in the next few weeks, Sam. Is good to get you and them in to have a proper discussion. Their stuff is freely available online. You can have a look. But what it seems to be is a kind of psychologist's view of if you're depressed, here's a place you can come. Now, it's not addressing really the causes of depression. What it's doing is it's saying the depression itself is the problem, and we can help you with it. But so what they're doing is, in a way, they're deliberately being quite superficial about why people feel they have less rights in society.
Yeah. Well, what's been developed here in Bristol that's kind of a new thing is this thing called a happiness pulse. And it's what I would call a web app. And you go online to fill in questions. And it's basically it's a questionnaire. It's a self-assessment tool, and they promise not to share your data. That's the very first thing which they, the very first thing they
well,
they
I'd like
say.
To have some sort of real guarantees that no one's going to steal that data from them. Anyway,
And it all just over 14 questions, and asking about what are your feelings in this present moment. So it's all about the moment and the here and now, and. Basically, it will give. It doesn't give you any feedback. It goes into different subsections, different demographics of Bristol. So it talks about how green are you. So it's not just about your health now. It's about how to control. How green are you?
I suppose that means how environmentally friendly are you?
Yeah.
Are you harming the environment around you? That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's and it's also collecting data about whether do you have a disability, do you have a mental health problem, also things like what sex are you, and it predicts. It's collecting data that also says that in what ward of Bristol are you in, and all the data that's collected it seems like now it becomes a competition. So let's say Ashley is better than St. Paul's in different areas of their well-being status. So
what is the happiness pulse? Is something that you've either got or you haven't got, is it?
Well, no, it's the happiness pulse is basically all it is. It's just an online questionnaire, and it takes a few minutes to complete.
And so Happy Cities are behind this, are they?
They are, indeed.
So they're trying to build up a profile of various parts of the city and who's happy and who isn't.
Yeah, and then it gets shared. So who is actually collecting the data? Well, it's not just Happy City. There's also...
Well, hang on a minute. You've said that they won't... First of all, that they won't share the data, and now you've said that they will.
Yeah, it's been collated for a reason. So it was designed not just by Happy City. So I delved in to see who's behind this happiness pulse and who's designed it. And it's the NEF, which is the New Economic Foundation. So several of their researchers are involved with that. Then also the BIT, the Behavioural Insights team from the government, are involved with designing these questionnaires. And then alongside that, Happy City have recruited the universities. So how do you get a base of people to fill in this questionnaire? So, of course, if you attract the city students to it and sell it to the universities, say, hey, get on board with this. This is a really cool tool, and you can help shape cities. That's help shape Bristol's happiness. And so, lo and behold, now you've got all these people filling in this questionnaire without questioning exactly what it does and where does this data get shared.
Okay, so what does it do ultimately?
Now I've told you that the government is involved with this. It's going to get shared directly to the government, and it will get shared with other departments, such as the Department of Work and Pensions. As I say, it's been collected by the BIT, the Behavioural Insights team.
Well, can you tell us a bit about them? Who are the Behavioural Insights team? They sound to me like some kind of a bunch of shrinks, basically, trying to psychologically profile the population.
Yeah, this is exactly what they are. And they started out as a government department, but a year and a half ago, they said, okay, we want to go privatise, we want to privatise ourselves, become a private company, yet they are still, their main employer is still the government in the same department, which is a civil justice area. And I've done some research into the Behavioural Insights team via apps such as Companies House and looked at how much they earn per year and to see where their tax goes. So per year, they are earning just over £20,000. And that's enough to probably pay just one person.
Well, that's not a lot, is it?
Not a lot. And I've read in books which are written by the people who work at the Behavioural Insights team saying that they make millions of pounds. So why isn't the Companies House, why isn't any millions of pounds registered with them?
Well, that's a good question. Have you any idea?
No idea so far. Well, so research on that continues.
The missing millions of the Behavioural Insights team. Yes, please. Everyone knows where they are. Everyone sees them, yeah. Finds them. In a plastic bag or something, please do let us know here at Dialect.
Yeah. So to continue, there's the NEF, so New Economic Foundation.
Now, I know a bit about the New Economics Foundation. They were founded by Paul Ekins, in the 1980s now, and then late 1980s. And then they used to organise this thing called TOES, the Other Economic Summit, which used to run brilliant conferences, which used to run alongside the IMF's annual summits and would go along to things like the Davos meetings, run parallel conferences, things like that. So they used to be good.
Okay.
Then I remember in the 90s, they were taken over by a chap called Ed Mayo as a director, and it started heading downhill fast. I mean, basically, you couldn't get any kind of straight answers out of them, really, since he took it over.
Right.
So it started off on a great mission, mm-hmm. very good mission, positive mission, and it seemed to have then kind of lose its way. But anyway, what's NEF doing?
Okay, what are NEF doing? Indeed, 5 years ago, they designed the 5 ways of well-being. So this is a measurement tool designed in partnership with the government and also another organisation called Nesta. And that there's a lot of work, seem to be a lot of work behind this. What are the five ways to how to change how happy you are?
So do you know what those five ways are?
To connect, be active, take notice, keep learning, and give. So these actives are simple things.
Presumably give more information to the psychological profile teams, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, yes, it doesn't sound anything really inspirational about that. It actually sounds rather creepy. But anyway, so, yeah, carry on.
And it was. It's designed by the UK government's Foresight Project, which so that's foresight to look into the future, on mental capacity and mental capital of well-being. The project, first published in 2008, draw on state-of-the-art research, scientific research, this is, about mental capital and mental well-being throughout life. And it asked the NEF, the New Economic Foundation, to develop these five ways to well-being to communicate its key findings.
Well, let's just think about how organisations like the New Economics Foundation work, is they don't get any real income. They have to rely on foundation funding, funding from organisations outside, charities, that sort of thing. And, of course, the charitable sector is pretty low. So there are people commissioning this work, I'd imagine, from them. And they don't have much choice. They either go under or they do stuff like this. And I know, also know that you, one of the things you've looked into is this resilience training army. Now, who are they?
You've got happiness and well-being. And it all feeds back to a university. In America, Pennsylvania University, and they designed, as part of well-being and happiness, the resilience training for the US Army. So since 2009, the university has been working with the United States Army, and this is a professor from the university called Martin Seligman. I usually pronounce that wrong, but people in positive psychology, which is what this is based on, usually hit me or do nasty things if you pronounce a guru's names wrong. The guru behind it all, yeah. So Professor Martin Seligman.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. begins to sound like a cult. Anyway, I'd just like to bring Viren in, Viren Patel here. You're a social justice campaigner, Viren. I wonder what you make of what we've heard so far and how it links up with economics and productivity.
Well, I think there's a broad range of manipulation going on here by what I see as the models that Sam has described and what the government's trying to do. If you look at happiness, that as a concept in itself is really something that you can't define and I can't define for each other. So I might like Marmite, you might hate Marmite, and vice versa. So if you look at it in a broader scale and put it into economics, well, what they're trying to do is say, how much money does one need to be productive in the environment and also to make sure that they benefit the economic system that we're living in at the moment? And that economic system is based on tax, based on the fiat currency, based on house prices going up.
Sorry, you say the fiat currency. What do you mean by that term?
Well, it's money that's printed by the banks because the central bank says we're going to give you a pound. And if we give you a pound to, say, for example, NatWest or any other high street bank, you can print 10 more of those pounds and charge them out as interest.
Right, basically. So there is what you're saying effectively, and I mean there's more and more people saying the same, yeah, is that money is basically a kind of contract, a fiction.
At the moment it is, yeah. The way it's been set up, the system is that way.
The banks can just make it up out of nowhere. That's almost like a magician clicking their fingers and making money up out of nowhere.
Well, exactly. And so my issue is really coming to where we are now in the economic injustice that we see around the world.
Because, I mean, the theory here is that if you can make money out of nowhere, well, why not just give it to people that need it?
Well, exactly. And that's the point. But that's not what this model looks at, realistically. What I see this model doing, so there's two specific ones in the model that Sam talked about, which was looking at connecting with people, and the other one is giving. Well, if you're a poor person on the street who has no house, who has no income, how can you give anything apart from being that person on the street?
Well, imagine they will say, well, you can give of yourself.
Well, exactly, but how much more can that person give, really, if they're not able to be a productive member of society that is able to produce something that people see as a productive value, or the government sees as productive value. So really, it's putting the onus on the individual that they must be creating their happiness and creating their welfare, when actually there's a larger system out there that actually should be giving more to people and providing social justice.
Now, I'm reminded of this document which was released, must have been in the 1980s, I think, called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars in the United States. What that did, and it was, you know, there are some people that say it was a load of nonsense, but it's an argument that hangs together. That is, that computers that were developed after World War II could be used to control society through economics and through monitoring how much money everybody's got, and if people behave in a good, positive manner, as the government sees it or as the computer programmer sees it, then they can be rewarded with more money, more jobs, and if they don't behave properly, then I shouldn't use that word properly as the computer programmer sees it, then they can have their welfare removed. And the whole point of this being that they wouldn't necessarily know how and why that had been done to them. So I wonder if you think that's got any validity here, either of you.
Well, I think the way that the social system and construct that's been set up is around the fact that you should produce something so that pays a tax. And then that tax will pay for your welfare. Well, that system is already failing. Really, the people who get away with it are the corporations and the individuals who are at the top. So the con trick and, you know, this data collection that goes on is about how to keep the masses really in control, and how the minority at the top would just be maximised into learning that everything is normal, but when actually it's not.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we've even heard from people like the Joseph Rowntree Foundation that work is no longer a route out of poverty. You know, they're saying that you can work and you can work, but you still may not be able to pay the rent, the electricity bills, all that sort of thing. You know, yes. On a 0-hour contract, you may be ready to work, but then not be given any work, Sam.
Yeah, there's lots of things which have been developed over the last few years. And this, more recently, when you start looking at how charities are taking advantage of people with disabilities and mental health problems, so people who have vulnerabilities, and telling them to just be happy and to move on, and without thinking about how to challenge things. And this is the important part, is doing challenging and talking about people's inequalities, because once you've become put into a vulnerable state, then you can be taken advantage of. And this is what kind of leads on to how the Department of Work and Pensions are using this area of psychological manipulation and doing happiness onto people who are benefit claimants, and saying you've got to go on to work courses to earn your benefit, but included with that is a job coach, and that job coach is trained in happiness, and they'll tell you how to be happy, and how to be positive.
I can imagine some people things. Who desperately want a job grinding their teeth at the prospect of having someone telling them how to be happy. But anyway, where's the best place to go to find out more about this, Sam?
If you search online for the Happiness Pulse, you will find it.
Yep. But what about deconstructing it? Okay, you know, so finding out deconstructing. What it's really about.
Okay, what it's really about, there's a really fantastic blogger called Kitty Jones, and she has a site. So Kitty, Kitty's Jones, jones.wordpress.com, and she's been looking at the politics and the insights of psychological coercion, and looking what's taking place within job centres within the UK. And there's some really fantastic blogs there.
And what can we do, Vera, and what do you think?
Well, I think the real main thing is people who are in a social injustice place and in that capacity is to campaign for their own justice. That's where it starts. It starts with you, and say that you don't accept the certain quality of service that you're receiving, whether it might be from the Department of Work and Pensions, whether it might be from the NHS, or whether it might be from a local public service. And that helps people to raise their voice in the community by the individual raising their voice and, you know, giving it to the MPs, giving it to councillors, you know, coming together in groups and saying, this is what we want as justice. I think, you know, £78 a week, can someone survive on that for 2-3 months? I don't think so. Not in this expensive world that we live
in. I'd like to see some of the MPs try. Anyway,
exactly.
Yeah. Sam Downey, website dsounds. D, letter D, SOUNDZ.co.uk, freelance journalist. And Viren Patel, social justice campaigner, thanks very much for joining us on Dialect. And what I'll do is I'll leave a link to the Kitty's website on our Dialect show page.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
My name's Sergeant Dougie Page and I'm Ministry of Defence Police. The briefing is that the Ministry of Defence Police will be providing the policing services for today's cabinet demonstration. We have a positive duty to protect your right to peacefully protest whilst taking due regard for your safety and the safety of others. We would request that you conduct yourself in a manner that does not impinge upon the rights and safety of others and that other persons and road users are not impeded or obstructed in going about their daily business. Please be advised that Section 128 of the Serious Organised Crime and Police Act 2005 creates an offence of trespassing in a designated site. RAF Menwith Hill is one of those designated sites specified within the Act. Any acts of trespass within the secure perimeter offence line will render you liable to arrest. I think that's very unlikely that anybody will breach that offence because you have to actually go inside the establishment to do it. A safe and appropriate place to conduct your protest is the clearly defined area behind the barriers. The police will ensure your safety, which will allow you to protest and be clearly seen by persons exiting the base. You are requested to refrain from protesting elsewhere on Menwith Hill Road, where there is not the same level of protection. You can see the barriers there. Actually, one of your signs is already on them. Please comply with the directions of the police officers present during the demonstration. The officers will control the flow of traffic exiting or entering the base to ensure your safety and the right to peacefully protest, whilst also maintaining the safety and rights of all other road users. This is a primary objective in respect of the policing presence during the demonstration. Please assist us in achieving this aim by adhering to the advice and guidance contained within this information sheet. Thank you for your attention. Do you have any questions?
Well, I do. I mean, it says RAF on the door, doesn't it? But it's mostly Americans in here. Why are the British police protecting what is effectively an American
this
base?
This is a Ministry of Defence establishment. The commander of the base is an RAF personnel. It's Ministry of Defence, and we are Ministry of Defence Police, therefore we are protecting Ministry of Defence property.
Okay, but it's mainly Americans.
Americans are hosted on the establishment, but it's not an American base, it's an RAF base.
Because I'm from Bristol, just around the corner from us, we've got GCHQ. Right. This is an American version of that, isn't it?
Some of the people in here are from GCHQ. There are British personnel from GCHQ who work in here, but there are some Americans as well.
And what's the purpose of this place?
I have got no idea. All I know is a government communications establishment.
Are you happy about American bases here in Britain?
I don't have an opinion.
You're just here to do your job?
I am, yes.
And all these golf balls, I mean, that's the one thing with Menwith Hill, that anyone that drives past or sees photographs of it, they see these giant golf balls. Why are the golf balls?
They're to protect the equipment that's underneath them. That's what they're there for, it's to protect them from weather.
Okay, and satellite dishes. So the other thing is that, for example, you can't see where the satellite dish is pointing. Anyway, this sort of protest, is there really any need for you to be here? Because you've got enormous gates and everything stopping anybody getting in. I mean, the people who are standing out here have got flags. They're not even in the way.
I can't tell you my opinion on it, but that is the plan that we have here to deal with the demonstration. There's actually only two of us here that's actually...
If I look around, I can see more security people.
People are looking after the security of the establishment. They're not here for the demonstration.
Has anyone ever got into this place?
People have got in, but not very far. Yeah, a long time ago, there was no fence around the exterior here. So, you know, it was a lot more difficult to keep the place secure. But obviously, due to occurrences since then, it's had to be made more secure. And that's probably when you're referring back to.
It's now our responsibility.
So what happened to the North Yorkshire Police?
The North Yorkshire Police have handed it over to us.
I'm Sarah Swift. I come from Ripon. And I'm here because I'd like to challenge what's going on in there and to make it more accountable.
Probably. So what is going on in there? All we got from the policeman just now was, well, it's a communication base, that's all I know.
Yes, well, I think the communications are to do, you can put me right if I'm wrong, to do with missile defence partly, perhaps to do with surveillance of communications in Britain, as Edward Snowden, you know, talked about men with.
Well, we heard about something called PRISM, didn't we, which is supposed to be listening into everything pretty much in real time. And so if you say something, whether it's being listened to when your phone is switched off or whatever, what they can do is switch it through to a live person in the US who can then listen live to what you're saying and, if necessary, flag it up. So that the whole PRISM business is quite incredible. And also, of course, Google does this too. As you're searching, if you're searching for words that someone has decided they don't like and they want to check you, they can then live watch you on online surfing and searching if you've put certain terms into Google. Anyway, a bit annoying that Google cooperates with these people so much. In fact, some people say it's just a front for them. But anyway, what do you know about what's happening in there? What do we actually know?
I think that we rely on whistleblowers like Edward Snowden to tell us, you know, the sorts of things that are going on. Apart from missile defence, obviously, sorry to go back. You know, if we ask our MPs to ask questions, that's sometimes a way of getting information, isn't it?
So missile defence, I mean, that sounds okay. It doesn't sound too threatening. What's the problem with that?
Unfortunately, it enables a first strike by the Americans. It's not just defensive. The name is perhaps misleading, do you think? I personally think it is misleading. I think the problem is that it's all escalating a conflict situation in the same way that modernising of nuclear weapons, which Obama, modernising in inverted commas, is investing in, seems to me to invest, sorry, to escalate conflict rather than to work towards disarmament or work towards more trusting relationships.
We've just had the Trident vote as well, haven't we? So that, I suppose that's part of this big military-industrial complex we see here.
I'm Bridget Mary Oates. I come from Bradford. I used to be joint coordinator with Lindis Percy, but I had to give that up because of other things that I have to do. I think the reason that I'm here is that we actually really don't know what's going on in there. And if you read, there's a lovely booklet that's been written about Menwith Hill and about how actually I don't think it were ever passed in Parliament for them to actually build here. It was more or less, you know, allowed to happen. In them days, they were kind of selling it that you were giving sort of economy to the local industry and businesses. Well, actually, that's not happened because we know fine well that they're shipping their own American stuff and that they are quite independent. We know now that everything's been demolished, though there's not as many personnel on there. So that sort of highlights to me that it's becoming more technical. And actually, what's going on? You know, I do believe.
Well, we've just got another guy going in here in his black car, yeah. Zipping in. I mean, it's obviously employing some people, and these mostly seem to be local people.
Well, I'm not so sure about that.
How do you know that they're local people?
Because they're driving a British car, not necessarily. When we were allowed to stop the cars before it was in contention, I think most of the cars that were stopped were Americans.
Yes. I also think there are a lot of American, or very obviously American cars coming out often.
Yes, yeah.
Especially, and perhaps now at this moment, going out through the other gate, to be honest.
Okay, so you're saying when you're doing your protest here, you've got people disappearing in and out on an alternative exit.
Yes, which they normally, on most weekends, and on other weeknights, do not have open. They have it open, especially on the demonstration night, because we're so frightening.
We're very peaceful, and we are in contention about the yellow line. We were able to protest and to stop the traffic coming out, the cars, vehicles coming out, in a really peaceful way. And you know what? Lots of the personnel that were coming out were fine and dandy about that, and were actually quite supportive. But the Americans, we've just been informed that the Americans have decided to change the goalposts, and now they've drawn another line, which even the MDP don't agree with, and putting us behind some barriers. And that was because a nice American, I believe, tried to run one of the protesters down, or allegedly.
Yes, yeah. It was. I think he's been charged with grievous bodily harm. Did you know about? Not with intent, just grievous bodily harm, but he's pleading not guilty. I think the CCTV, which the MDP were even surprised he would do that, shows conflicting evidence to that, without going into the detail of it.
So the MDP, these are the Ministry of Defence Police, are they?
Yes. Yeah.
And so you were doing a protest and some American actually drove into somebody? Did he actually hurt them?
Yes, went over her foot. This is... It shouldn't make any difference, the age, but this we're talking about... an elderly Quaker lady, aren't we, here? And what she feels bad about, funnily enough, is that she was actually smiling at the man, and then he just didn't stop, accelerated towards her. And the case is ongoing. It's been a long time, hasn't
it? It's going for trial.
Yes.
It's going for trial. Mm. And as a consequence of that, this was last August. They thought it was a good thing to do a risk assessment, which they did in October, and then suddenly in March, well, they decided to use the power of dispersal on the ground there, and arrested Lindy's purser. And now we're not allowed to go over the yellow line, and we have to go where we're told. And it ran really well before. Really, really well. It was policed really well, facilitated, good humour. You know, we all got along together. In fact, we used to have tea parties, didn't we, every evening. But now, what they're saying now is what he's actually said, is it's the Americans that have changed it all, and they seem to want this kind of confrontation.
So do you have any kind of communication through your MP about what's going on here?
Fabian Hamilton is really, really good in going and asking questions from Leeds. And he's really good and asks questions for us. But Lindis probably is more responsible.
Yes, I think the MPs they're not able to go in there and find out what's going on as easily as that. You know, it is really not simple, is it, for them to find out what's going on either. And this is one of the worries, really.
The thing is that, you know, the Military of Defence sort of police, they don't know what they're guarding. So they're telling us that they're trying to keep us safe, but how are they keeping us safe when we've got something that's a massive target to you know, a possible target for an enemy?
But, I mean, obviously the military have got to communicate, haven't they? I mean, and if they aren't going to communicate, then they're not going to win any battle, and we're wasting our money. They're throwing our money down the drain if they can't communicate.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. But I just feel that we've probably gone back to how it used to be probably years ago for our protests. And we have a right. In this country, we still have a right to protest. And we should be able to protest as we were doing previously. And we're not given that right here.
But if you look at some of these flags, some of the things we're objecting to are things like the illegal use of drones, you know, which is obviously there's been a lot in the press about. And so anyway, it's a publicising the fact that we're challenging those things to do with communications, you know, that you can wage warfare at a distance and the problems of that, really.
We also have links with Guantanamo, London Guantanamo campaign, so we do... quite often we do vigils and for the Guantanamo, the closure of Guantanamo. So we did one last week, didn't we? Because It was President Obama's promise that it would close Guantanamo down. And I think 2 weeks ago, he had 200 days to fulfil his promise. Last Tuesday, it was 191 days. So we came up and we dressed up in our Guantanamo outfits and had a nice placard for that. So we do have links with that. We also have links with Jeju Island, South Korea.
Yes, I think there's a sense of showing solidarity with movements opposing US bases in other parts of the world, which are obviously a lot better supported than this, you know, demonstration here, like in Ramstein or Okinawa or, you know, these places. And I think that we're trying to, you know, be in solidarity with this as well, I think.
Get guest speakers. You were saying about Bruce Gagnon. He was here. Beginning
he was actually the one explaining about the missile defence to me, that, you know, in the war games that they play a first, or they practice a first strike scenario. And this had been published in some erudite journal. They obviously thought nobody would actually read this, that this was what was going on. That it wasn't just missile defence, in inverted commas, it's also could be an offensive weapon.
So whereabouts? I mean, the Americans have been in Britain since the war. I mean, it's not really that much chance of them going, is there?
We're always hopeful. We can but try. I think while ever they're here and forcing themselves around the world, because that in effect that's what they are doing, and they are being opposed everywhere for this. They've not got one in Sweden yet, but we do know that they're using part of the north of Sweden, I think, to do the practicing with the aircraft, you know, to how to kill people better, I suppose, how to bomb people. We know that happens.
Well, that's a bit naughty, isn't it, because Sweden's not supposed to be in NATO.
Absolutely. Well, you talk to some of our lovely colleagues over in Sweden, and they will tell you, and actually they kind of joke about it, that it's becoming like another state of, you know, of America. So there are many, many people around the world that oppose what's happening and how they're enforcing their bases there. How do we stop them? How do we do it? You know, we don't get enough people here to protest. People are not aware of it. We don't really see in mainstream media, oh, look, America are just building another base somewhere. We don't get to hear that, do we? And we're not meant to hear that.
Yes, you have to really pick through the BBC News.
It's sold that it's for our safety, but actually, is it for our safety?
I agree. The question. I
mean, we've just had the vote this week on Trident, haven't we, as well, which is an American system. The British obviously decided that they need to be friendly with the Americans in order to buy this technology.
Yes, but this is very worrying, isn't it, really? Because, you know, why are we so influenced by them? And do people really see the dangers of it? I'm not convinced, really. Partly because of the way things are reported in the media, and it's almost like a vicious circle. We've created a situation where Russia feels perhaps under threat, encircled by US bases, NATO bases, and the Russians have given away a lot in the past, haven't they? Previous presidents have given away a lot, it seems, to the US, to me. Yeah.
Well, they've certainly given away a lot of the former Soviet Union. Many of those countries are now NATO countries.
Exactly. And, you know, the verbal agreement wasn't it, that NATO would not be expanded. And we're doing it all the time, it seems to me, making it larger. And then when we expect Russia not to be aggressive in return, it seems to me.
But you can't uninvent nuclear weapons.
Exactly. It's the whole. That's why I say it's a vicious circle, that it goes on, doesn't it? Because we've created this effect.
We don't have to love it either, do we? And don't mean to say that we have to want it. We don't want it. You know, we wish that we could undo it. But it's not. It's not as if every country has them. We're talking, is it about nine places that have nuclear?
Yeah, and there's some that don't like to admit it, are there?
Well, there are. There are. There are, but there's lots of things that are going on you know, in other nations that we don't get to know about. So it's not as if that every country that we're in sort of immediate threat from every other country that has nuclear weapons. It's not like that. So I'm really concerned. And no, I will fiercely protest Trident and, you know, in any way that I can.
Most of the press this week has been talking about it as 30 billion. The Guardian a few weeks ago reported actually it's more like 205 billion. So we're even being told porky pies when it comes to the figures. Let's just go back to this whole thing of uninventing nuclear weapons. It's impossible.
It is impossible to uninvent, but I think money could be spent better, to be honest. And I think they were on about renewing Trident and getting rid of Trident and spending lots more money on it. Well, you know, it's hardly second hand, is it?
Yes, and we need to spend money on doing the things. I'm not being specific here about what they are, that could be create more peace, you know, that would avoid conflict and make people more content in their own places, you know, more better feeling of well-being, because it's like we've seen it, I think, with the Brexit thing, you know, that when people feel bad, they feel fearful and aggression follows. And I just feel that it's all very well, you can't just focus on nuclear issues. It's got to be to do with thinking of the things that actually make for peace, or doing those things, whatever they are, widening your options, really, rather than relying on a nuclear weapon. And at the moment, we're cutting back on conventional forces, or, you know, to defend our country.
These Trident submarines, some people say that Britain doesn't even really control them.
I can imagine that.
No comment. Some people say. How would we find that out? How would we get to the bottom of that? How do we find out the truth? We're here. CAB is a campaign for accountability of American bases. And we've been going, 14 years here? But previous to that, much, 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 much longer.
It's been campaigning since about 1992, wasn't it?
1992. And we're still, you know, nobody's still accountable for what's going on. So how do we do that? You know, how do we make people accountable? The only other way that we can do that is by putting pressure, you know, putting MPs under pressure, by getting more people involved. And quite honestly, we're failing to do that, because people are so immersed into actually having to live a life and to survive. People's mental health, people's well-being is not very good at the moment. You know, we're facing massive, massive cuts to our NHS, massive, massive cuts to public services. I'm a public sector worker, and I can see what's happening, and I'm absolutely devastated, and it's not for the good of the people. People are focusing on just trying to survive and to make a living and to make a better life for the families, and they're not concerned on what's going on, you know, out of that. I work for public services. I work with children and families, children that are looked after, children that may have been adopted, children that have gone through, and families that have gone through massive early years trauma. And we should be providing services for these children and families. And actually, we're not. We're having cuts to those services. This is a massive thing. And we're seeing, you know, massive difficulties in family lives, that people are not coping, that the families are splitting up, children are being taken away from parents, and it's not good. So the services that were there that were set up to support that and to help that, you know, they've been taken away. So what are we doing? You know, we're just sort of focusing on that, and we're making it worse. So more and more people cannot actually think beyond what's going on and think of the bigger picture on what really is happening here. And all the decisions that are being made and the things that have brought in the back door in Parliament that we don't hear about because we're distracted with something else. You know, And truly, they're just having to get on with their lives. So why are they going to be interested in coming up here on a Tuesday night when they probably don't have transport anyway?
Well, so, I mean, it's a bit depressing. It sounds like these people have won. The Americans and the military have won.
Not while I'm alive. No, I don't think they have, because we have to have faith that there are caring people about, that there are people that can think like that, that I'm fortunate that, you know, I can get up here, you're fortunate you can get up here, we can, you know, all right, time's difficult for us because we're busy getting on with our lives, we've got families, and this is not just what I do lots of other things, as Sarah does. But, you know, we do come up here and we do care and we network with other people, you know, and other organisations with CND and People Global, the Global Peace Network, which you've mentioned about Bruce. So that's what we do. And sometimes it's quite cheering to know that you're not alone. Because last night when I was sat watching telly in bed, watching the vote of Trident, I just felt the loneliest person alive.
Yes, that's right. So it's a solidarity thing, and I think it's interesting to me that people want, even though there's only two people here, they want a picture to put on Facebook, people who can't be here, you know, and the actual doing of something must be significant. There's many more people who go on that Facebook site than who come up here to demonstrate. Why does it matter to them to have a picture of people actually demonstrating on a Tuesday night? It's bizarre, isn't it? The action is in the real world is still significant in some ways. I don't know.
It's nice to be able to have conversations with people, though. And there are people that have no idea what's going on up here. And to actually have a conversation, and sometimes because it's sold in media that they are looking after our best interests, that this is for our own safety. But sometimes if you question it and if you unpick it and you have a decent conversation and you are calm and you are understanding of where this person's coming from, that you can enlighten other people and think, well, yeah, God, I never thought of that. And they have a light bulb moment. And they might not necessarily be able to get up here, but they can support in some ways by probably, you know, writing to an MP.
Well, this place here was made famous in the 1980s, first by Duncan Campbell. So he exposed the fact that it was being used to spy on the British telephone network, for the Americans were using this as a gateway in to listen to phone conversations.
And exporting of data as well to the US. I'm not sure that really should happen under EU or our law, should it really?
But they've just had this safe harbour judgment which says it shouldn't. So I don't know, maybe the military have got some sort of get out of jail free card on that.
Bound to have. They have do. Yes, they do.
To us, GCHQ are complicit in that, in that they're spying for you know, spying on the American citizens, and then the Americans are spying on us, and then it's a bit of a, well, this is what I'm assuming, is that it's just kind of a trading thing. But
what about this thing of if you've done nothing wrong, you should have nothing to hide?
I hate that saying. Actually, I don't want my conversations listened to. My private conversations, my Skypes to my husband when I'm working away, that might be personal, I don't want them being monitored. You know, why should we have them monitored? I know I've got nothing to hide, but actually, yeah, I have. Those are my private conversations.
Well, these guys in here will say there is no privacy anymore.
Yeah, but there is. There should be. We're all entitled to privacy. Absolutely. That's a basic, fundamental human right.
And the point is that to have some sort of safeguards on how you operate is helpful. I mean, how armies operate or how surveillance operates. It seems to me that the argument, if you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to hide, only works if the people doing the surveillance are benevolent, doesn't it?
And are open. And exactly. They're open as well.
And we've not had that sort of society in our country where we have been under a really oppressive regime. So we tend to not worry about it as much as people in other countries do, interestingly enough. But I think, you know, to go back to the nuclear thing, to put spent nuclear fuel in bullets in Iraq, that's something that shouldn't happen. You know, it's something you could legislate against, or, you know, the UN should do something, in my view. You know, that it's all very well saying you can't reinvent nuclear. Well, you can organise it better, use it for better purposes.
You see, I get worried about the whole thing because Lockheed Martin were given the responsibility to do the census, the last census that we had in Britain. And they got all the information from everybody. And they told us that we have to fill these censuses in. And we were actually told through work that we had to do it because it would be better for our communities. Uh-uh, absolutely not. None of our communities benefited from anything that came out of the censuses, I don't believe, because actually they still went ahead with all the cuts. But why were Lockheed Martin sort of commandeered to do this census? What were that about? And they get to keep the information. What's that about? You know, because they're not, they're not the nicest manufacturers, are they?
Well, no, they're not. And actually, Theresa May, the new Prime Minister's husband, is a big investor in Lockheed Martin.
Yes, he is, and G4S as well. So, you know, they've got a nice thing going on, really, I suppose, if she's kind of enforcing people being locked up. It's feeding the private prison organisations, G4S, and, you know, it's more money for his investments, I guess, isn't it? If you can get things like that. But I don't know. It is a concern that it's the whole thing. And I think that is the massive thing, is that we don't get as much support up here because there is just so much to protest at the moment, and you get a real big division amongst the sort of working people in that, well, actually, I'm more concerned about the NHS, so I'm going to go and I'm going to go protest that. Well, I'm more concerned about the cuts in, you know, the austerity cuts, so I'm going to focus on that. And we're all split. We're kind of all split. But, I think you've still got to consider that the money that's been spent up here, that's been spent through Trident, that has a knock-on effect to money that's not going to the NHS and not going to public services. It's got to have an effect. You know, money is, it's been spent there. It's not been spent elsewhere. It's simple. It's simple mathematics.
And I think reading things in the American press, some people feel that the same there, that the military gets its budget. And is it really accountable to the voter? And I think that we share that problem, don't we? We tend to think, I think we, you know, just by being here or coming out with your flags, you get to talk to a lot of people, and sometimes you learn, you know, you're changing all the time yourself. It's not just that they might change a view. We learn a lot too by, you know, having the flag in the road, and people ask you, what are you doing? You know, your friends. We have a lot of military in Ripon, you know, to talk to. We have people working here to talk to, you know, and it's very interesting to find out how other people feel about, you know, the choices that are made with our military.
Well, I mean, it certainly does seem to be a slide towards more militarism. We were told after the fall of the Berlin Wall there was going to be a peace dividend, and that doesn't really seem to have appeared. So is there any light at the end of the tunnel?
At our 2nd of July demonstration, I was quite cheered by Mike McGowan saying, you know, you've got to see these things as an opportunity. I'm not quite sure what my opportunity is, but I'm still looking for it, really.
When we start off education, we're happy to teach about the war, about wars and things, but we don't teach peace. We don't teach children about peace. There's very little done about peace. If you want to go and study peace, you've got to go do it at university. I would like to see more teachings on peace and a more peaceful way of life, and some more, you know, exploring that. Because I don't think we do that enough. I think it's just straight in, heavy-handed, and I just think it's a terrible example that we set to our children.
Although it's interesting to me that certainly in Ripon, you know, the British value of, you know, that people go on in terms of education, you know, they've been going on about, that in fact that includes the value of welcoming, and that schools, one or two have actually signed up, in Ripon have signed up, for becoming city of sanctuary, no, it would be sanctuary schools, aren't they?
Yes, yeah.
City of sanctuary schools, where they actually do get some education in various things, you know, with getting on with other people, you know, and accepting difference. And I'm hoping that, I think that's a good movement to encourage.
That was Sarah Swift and Bridget Mary Oak speaking to me just outside RAF Menwith Hill on the 19th of July 2016. That's just off the A59 road between Harrogate and Skipton. Well, that's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast and has been broadcast on community radio stations in Bristol, Swindon, Preston and St Albans. If you're online, you can subscribe to our emails or download the podcast from dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Sam Downey and Viren Patel, talking about the happiness agenda in Happy Cities, based here in Bristol. Also, Sarah Swift and Bridget Mary Oates, outside the base of Menwith Hill in Yorkshire. That's where the National Security Agency spy on us, an American base inside a supposed RAF base. And they're from the Campaign for Accountability of American Bases. Thanks also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialects are Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. And anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft or Volunteering Bristol. So that was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
She's a perfect 10, but she wears a 12. Baby, keep a little 2 for me. She could be sweet 16, busting out of the seams. There's still love in the first degree.
When he's at my game, with a big fat aim, you wanna see the smile on my face. And even at my door, with a poor, poor form, there ain't no man can replace. 'Cause we love our love in different sizes. I love her body, especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight. If he's extra large, well, I'm in charge. I can work this thing on top. And if he's XXL, well, what the hell? Every penny don't fit the slot.
The anorexic chicks, the model sex, they don't hold no weight with me. Well, 8 or 9, well, that's just fine. But I like to hold something I can see. 'Cause we love our love in different sizes. I love her body, especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight. A bottle watch to time your beauty. And I've had it for the second hand.
I've bought a calendar, and every month is taken up by the love of man.
'Cause we love our love in different sizes. I love her body, especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight. Especially the lies. Time takes its toll, but not on the eyes. Promise me this, take me tonight.